I was asking you.
You don't want my answer.
For the ones who were not in the picture, are some people already giving me their picture in their name?
Not necessarily collection.
You will be immortalized.
All right. So, I have a question. Am I coming out of the speakers too? No? Okay.
It's a small room, should be all right.
Yeah, no, I don't want to be coming out of the speakers. So, couple of announcements up front. The first is that it's maybe in a weird way a good thing that we're in the Alice room, because I intend this to be pretty far at the informal end of the spectrum of lectures. There's this beautiful theorem in computer science called IP equals P space. And I won't go into the details, but basically what it means is this. An interactive conversation is hugely more powerful than a lecture for proving things. This is true in a rigorous computer science sense, and it's true in a pedagogic sense. It's also true that if we have a conversation, then I need to prepare fewer slides, which is good, because I did prepare fewer slides. So I have a lot of notes and preparation and random things that I can or will say, but at some point we're literally going to run out of slides. If we don't run out of slides, it means we really didn't get very far into the material. So I'm actually hoping that we run out of slides. But along the way, I'll run out of material that I plan to say if you don't ask me questions, etc. Essentially what I've set up is a framework where I'm going to go high point, high point, high point, and I'm fully expecting that your response will be, what, huh? Or perhaps even outright rage. And that's where we stop and we have a conversation, we throw some stuff up on the board, and hopefully as a result, everybody figures that out. So, I have one more comment or actually request. Who in the room knows what the word amanuensis means?
I don't want to have to say that.
Okay. Okay, so you know, but you can't tell us. It's an epistemic restriction.
I love it. Amanuensis to this question.
So I need a volunteer for an amanuensis. Oh, maybe I should tell you what it is. An amanuensis is essentially someone who takes notes. And what I would like is someone who's willing to write down all the questions that are asked, not the entire dialogue, just the question, and then email them to me afterward, because those questions are going to form the foundation of the lecture that I give on Thursday, along with the questions that those of you who didn't have the courage or the time or the general elbow-throwing obstreperousness to ask during the lecture are going to email me. The point of all of that is, first of all, I need somebody who will write down questions for me. Going once, going once. I'm sure it's worth extra credit or something. Bingo. No, I picked the guy in the front because I don't trust Ray not to fall asleep. Okay, so your job is simply to write down questions. If you know who asked it, put the name by it, and then email it to me afterward. That's my email address. I am relying on the questions that you're going to ask along the lines of, I can't believe you said such a god-awful stupid thing, or I have no idea what you said, to fire me up on Thursday. It's my first name at mylastname.com. So the point of the two lectures that I'm going to give, the two interactive protocols that I'm going to give, is to try to come up with some sort of a question to this question, because there is no answer. But what I'll try to survey is what people have proposed as answers, and how to sort of paste all that together, like charts on a manifold, to get something approaching a coherent view of what probability is, what probability is about. Any questions? Yes?
So, I mean, given the trouble in coming up with, well, the fact that there's not a consensus on the interpretation of probability, is it possible that it's actually not a single concept we're using the same word for, that there's actually different concepts, and that we're trying to fit them all together into one concept, but that's just not possible?
So it's more than a possibility. That's a fact. The word probability is unquestionably used in all sorts of contexts. Now, this is an old problem in physics. The word energy is used in a different context by, for instance, people in the city of Santa Fe, New Mexico. There are some people in the city of Santa Fe who work for Los Alamos National Laboratory, and they use energy in the same sense that you all probably use it, as a concrete physical quantity. There are other people who do interesting things with patchouli and crystals, and they use energy in a very different concept. I don't think there's any way to tack those two together except by having such an open mind that your brain falls out. So what we do, and what one of the founders of probability theory that I'm going to cite here emphasizes, is we throw out all the stuff that's not relevant to science. Even after we do that, there are still disparate concepts that we mean when we use the word probability, even within science. So, yes, and if I get a chance over the coffee break that I'm going to declare for 5 minutes in the middle, I'm going to paste in a couple of quotes that I didn't get a chance to paste in, basically backing up exactly that perspective, that at the end of the day, if we have a totally satisfactory theory, it's going to have to cover multiple frameworks. We're probably not going to be able to derive a completely satisfactory definition of probability from one rigorous notion. Thank you. You write that down? Excellent. You know his name?
Yes.
Okay, good.
I hope so.
All right. You probably know his name. So, I guess I could use the hockey stick, but I probably hit somebody with it. I mean, we're talking probability here. So, here's the problem that probability is supposed to be the answer to. We want to ground science in mathematics. We want to ground mathematics in logic. And in logic, you have three kinds of statements. You have true statements, 1 equals 1. You have false statements, 1 equals 2. And you have undecidable statements. This program halts. That's it. And most statements that we consider are either true or false, and these undecidable ones only showed up after centuries of mathematical research. So in some sense, we might say these aren't terribly important. They're fascinating, but they're not hugely important. So even though there's a middle ground here between true and false, most of the time in logic, we work with true and we work with false. Yes?
Using a time scale for undecidable?
No, I'm talking about Gödel. I'm talking about statements that are formally undecidable. Where, for instance, colloquially, this statement is false. Is that statement true or false? Right? If it's true, it's blah, 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 blah. That's the basis of the halting problem, actually, in computer science, which is a much more formal and rigorous actualization of Gödel's theorem, which is that in any logical system, you start categorizing statements that you can state in that logical system into true ones and false ones, and eventually you get to ones that it's not that you're not smart enough to figure them out. It's that if they're true, then they're false, and if they're false, and then they're true. So that's Gödel's incompleteness there. The point is that those statements, while they might be really cool, are not the ones that we deal with on a regular basis. Now, on the other hand, if you're a scientist, if you're a physicist, if you're, God forbid, an experimental physicist, then on a daily basis, you deal with statements that do not appear to be demonstrably true or false. And here are some examples. I've got a coin in my pocket here. Actually, that statement itself may be undecidable. Or false. There we go. Got a coin. All right, it's got a bear on one side, a queen on the other side. And I say, I flip it in the air, this coin will come up queens. And it appears that until we actually look at that, and certainly until it actually hit the ground, there's really no way to assign a truth value to that statement. Edge. Or statements about the future, right? That maybe we are not as easy to categorize as this one, where we could say, well, this is random. This is, you know, 50-50, right? Because that's what coins are. But I might say Joseph's next child, if he has one, will be a boy. And we have some evidence on this because everyone who works at PI has female children. So there's strong evidence that this statement might be considered sort of kind of false, but on the other hand, it seems entirely possible. Of course, it might even be undecidable if he gets hit by a bus tomorrow. So we can't even decide whether it's true, false, or undecidable. And then we've got things where these statements almost certainly have truth values, but we have absolutely no ability to assign them yet, right? Either the Higgs boson really exists or it doesn't. But until the LHC finds it or finds some kind of really convincing proof that it doesn't exist, what's the truth value of that statement? So this breakdown of logic is not something sophisticated, right? I mean, human beings have known since before we knew about logic that true and false didn't cover everything. So probability is supposed to resolve this problem. I want to quote a great scientist here. Of course, the main goal of science is to predict and control phenomena. But we also want to understand how nature works. And this is absolutely true. And these two currents are what push probability theory forward. They're the reason for probability theory. And they're what rip it apart. Because on the one hand, if we say we want to predict and control phenomena, then we're led towards things that work, things with broad applicability. And if we want to understand how nature works, then we're led towards methods that talk about truth, what's really there. And these are the two themes that run throughout interpretations of probability. Okay, so probability, at its most elemental, is a way of dealing with statements that do not appear to be either true or false. Maybe they are true, maybe they are false, but we don't know. Maybe they are not inherently true or false. The debate about whether a given statement has a truth value is one that I'm not going to get into. The point is that a lot of times, practically, we can't assign truth values to them. So this is what we use probability theory for. So instead of saying, God, I don't know whether the coin is going to come up heads or tails, or whether it might come up edge, or maybe it's even Turing complete and therefore undecidable, I say, well, the coin will come up heads with probability 1/2. Of course, for that matter, I could say the coin will come up heads with probability 3/4. I can assign a probability to it. It's some sort of a real number between 0 and 1 that quantifies, in some way I am absolutely not stating yet, an intermediate logical value. And so you could say that probability is logic in the face of uncertainty. It's what happens to logic if you say we have to deal with uncertainty. And I think that that's a true statement, but it's probably not the entire truth. So like logic, probabilities for different events may be related. And they combine according to particular rules. You don't have very much freedom as to what rules to combine them with. In fact, those rules look a great deal like logic. And if you restrict to probability valuations that are either 0 or 1 all of the time, then you get logic. So logic is a special case of probability. You enlarge it by assigning these real values between 0 and 1. Here, then, and this is called coherence, by the way, this idea that your probability assignments have to fit together. Yes?
Can you read the bullet points? Because you can only see about half the...
So where can you see down to?
I can't see the third bullet
point. Okay, the third point is everybody agrees that probability is sort of like logic. And that probabilities obey similar consistency relations. This is called coherence. What we do not agree about, and by we, I mean the different interpretational schools, is what probability actually is. We know how it behaves. We just don't know what it is. We don't know what it means. We don't agree on what it means to assign an intermediate value between true and false. So that is what I'm going to spend the rest of this afternoon talking about. And I mean the entire afternoon, till 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. We're still going to, I'm still going to be here. Okay, I'm just kidding. Any questions about that? Because that's sort of the bedrock question about interpretations of probability. What are they? Okay. So this M.G. Kendall was writing in 1949, and he commented that few branches of scientific method have been subject to so much difference of opinion as the theory of probability. We might throw what the heck does quantum mechanics mean in there. What's interesting is that, in a sense I'll talk about on Thursday, quantum mechanics is probability. It's non-commutative probability. And so all of the questions that beset the interpretation of probability beset the interpretation of quantum mechanics as well. However, they tend to get muted. In other words, the things that people violently disagree about in probability theory, we don't spend as much time disagreeing about in the interpretation of quantum mechanics, simply because there are even worse problems in the interpretation of quantum mechanics. And classical philosophers have known about these problems with probability for a long time. So one of the biggest lessons to take away from this week is what those questions are. So that if you come across them when you're stumped about quantum mechanics, you can say, aha, don't go there. Right? This is one of those questions that I am not going to resolve without resolving fundamental questions about probability theory. And if I want to study this, I might as well go to the somewhat easier case of probability theory and bang my head on it like 600 people for the last couple of centuries have. It's kind of like, if there's any of you coming from a computer science background, proving that a problem can be reduced to some NP-complete problem. Once you've done that, you don't know that it's hard, but you do know that it's hard to prove that it's hard, so you can give up. Okay. To zeroth order. Nah, we already went over zeroth order. Zeroth order is how does probability behave, right? First order. There are two schools of interpretation of probability. They're called physical probability and evidential probability. And for those of you looking for a sort of a roadmap to connect this with things you've already heard of, physical probability is often called frequentist probability, although actually frequentist probability is a particular kind of physical probability. Evidential probability is often known as Bayesian probability. Physical probability says that probability is a real quantity. It's like mass or energy or color. It exists out there. And so we do experiments to find the value of the probability. Now, real physical quantities tend to have effects on things that we can see. Mass whacks you. Energy gets you excited, right? These things are kind of abstract in the sense that, you know, have you ever seen some energy? No, I don't think so. But you've seen the effects of energy. You've seen, you know, there's a car parked at a stoplight, and all of a sudden it goes flying through the intersection, and some energy must have been transferred to it by that truck that just backed into it, and also momentum and all these other physical quantities. So we see these quantities through their effects. Similarly, you see probability through its effects. But those are indirect enough that probability cannot be directly observed. This is one of the basic tenets of physical probability. You can't just go out there and measure the probability directly. You have to do a bunch of experiments, like you flip the coin a bunch of times. And that slowly reveals to you what the probability of heads is. But the probability of heads is some real number that's a property of that coin. What this means, among other things, is that you can only use the word probability in certain restricted contexts. In much the same sense that if we as physicists were to fly out to Santa Fe for a conference and run across somebody on the street wearing colorful clothing and selling crystals and talking about energy, we would to each other say, well, that's not a use, that's not a correct use of the word energy. What they mean by energy is not what I'm interested in as a scientist. And that's the same thing that physical probabilists say about a lot of everyday uses of the word probability. Now, they also say it about a lot of scientific uses of the word probability. It's a very restricted set of cases where you can actually apply probability. Yes?
So we have, like, you go out and observe it.
For example, aren't you supposed to be writing this down?
Yeah. I'll write it down later. So we have a coin. And we have, let's say, it has probability 1/2 of heads. Or, but how, and we have to go out and observe it. How many times do we have to go out and observe it before we're confident that it has, say, 1/2 or something, some other number?
The same number of times that you would have to observe a rock before you were certain that its mass was exactly 1.7 kilograms, infinitely many, right? Every time you make a measurement in physics, there's some error. You make repeated measurements, and if you have the argument that the errors are independent, then you start narrowing down your confidence interval as to what the mass is. Now, same thing with probability, but you're never going to get to absolute certainty about any physical parameter in nature. Probability is no different. Yes?
It's a little bit different, because I can get a pretty good idea of what the mass of a rock is by looking at it once, whereas if, say, the probability of this physical probability of the coin happens to be changing in time, I could never get any sort of accurate prediction of what it is.
Yeah, I could quibble with various highly technical points of what you just said, but it's a good point in that this is why I say probability cannot be directly observed. And I'm making a distinction. That's true in a stronger sense than that the mass or the energy of something cannot be directly observed. It's even stronger than the sense in which frequency cannot be directly observed. What you just said, that if the probability is varying over time, you're never going to get a certain measurement of it, is also true of frequency. If you have something that has a certain frequency, and you only have a time-limited amount of time to look at that, you are absolutely restricted in how precisely you can measure the frequency. Because frequency is not a directly measurable property, right? The frequency controls how the configuration of the system changes over time.
You mean limiting frequency?
Oh, I mean frequency like, you know, boing, 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 60 hertz, that kind of frequency.
An oscillation. Or even speed, right? You can't measure the speed of something.
Let's not get, this is going to get us bogged down. I mean, good question, but the core point is that probability is a hidden variable. It's, you can't just observe it directly in a single shot, right? So there are, whereas mass, for instance, there's no absolute reason why you couldn't, there's no absolute bound on how precisely you could observe the mass. It's just a practical matter that you can never make a perfect measurement. So it's a good point. Yes?
Is the first possibility, is that a minority view? I mean, amongst commentators who typically...
Can you do me a favor and ask that question immediately after the coffee break?
Sure.
I'd like to address that as part of a whole list, in a larger context. Yes?
So, if we say probabilities are real things, it doesn't seem like we can really assign... Okay, for example, with a coin being a fair coin, right? What does that even mean, really? Because we can always set it up that if we, you know, we could essentially know how much force to impart to it and et cetera, to make it land heads or tails 100% of the time, in principle, right? We should be able to do this with a classical coin. So, I mean, it doesn't, so what do we say? What are our starting kind of hypotheses? What's our starting setup to say this is a fair coin? Like random initial conditions, and then you get into the question of, well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Like, so in that sense, I'm kind of have some cognitive dissonance over the idea of probability being a physical thing, even in the classes.
Great question. The simplest and easiest answer, and I'll flesh this out later, but actually, as a background, this is a school, this is a broad school. It contains within itself several more specific interpretations, and they differ on that question. There are, according to Wikipedia, currently 16 major schools of interpretation of probability theory. I don't even know what some of them are. So there's no unique answer, even within physical probability. But the simplest and broadest answer is that whenever what you just described is true, whatever by calculating the trajectory of the coin, you could infer something about how it's going to end up, the word probability cannot be used in that context, verboten. This leads to my chief objection to physical probability, and I will tell you up front that I find it unconvincing. Physical probability is so restricted in where it can be applied that you can always crowd its realm of applicability into a vanishing corner. Essentially, consistent with our view of physics, there's almost nowhere that you can really apply it. And therefore, it becomes a dead concept. Frequentists nonetheless apply it, but they apply it, in my view, by basically ignoring the fact that their own definitions prevent them from applying it. So my belief is that there must be some alternative theory that explains why probability works. Either that, or it works despite the existence of no theory that can possibly explain why it works. Yeah?
I was wondering how physical probability deals with an update of probability empirically, like, say, by Bayes' law. How do you, because that seems to me like, what do you say then, that you were wrong about what the physical probability of the object was, and you're just discovering more information about what the actual assigned physical probability is? But then I want to know, how is that different from evidential probability? It seems like it's just, you're saying that there is some probability, but everyone has different evidence about it. I don't see how you gain more from taking one from the physical property interpretation in that sense than you would from just.
So one thing I should point out is that in terms of how things are done, the vast majority of probabilistic calculations don't give a damn which of these interpretations you apply. It's kind of like quantum mechanics that way. Different interpretations lead to the same empirical result. If they led to different empirical results, we could falsify one of them. But it's a little bit different because quantum mechanics is an actual testable theory, whereas probability is not a physical theory that can be tested. It's essentially composed of axioms, and your data will always be consistent. So what different interpretations of probability give you is different rules for what the right thing to do is, different paradigms for thinking about what we're doing when, for instance, we take data. And I'll talk about this in a little while. As far as I'm concerned, you can only wallow around in the philosophy so long before you just get bored and sick of it. And so you have to go to actual cases. And so we're going to talk about statistical inference, which is really what you're talking about. Again, cutting through various answers that I could give, the view that a frequentist would give to approximately what you said is there is some true probability, but obviously if you've only taken a few samples, you can't get it exactly right. So you're going to be wrong, right? It exists, but we're all wrong to one degree or another. But your goal, as you take more and more data, is to get more and more right, to get closer and closer to the true probability, right? So there's nothing inconsistent by saying that you took some data and you inferred one thing for the mass, and Raymond took some other data and he inferred some other thing for the mass. It just means you're both probably wrong. Yes?
So your answer to Adam's question seemed a little dubious.
I'm sorry, which one is Adam? This year, okay.
So what you said is if you take some coin and you flip it and you say this coin has a physical property, but the probability it will show heads when I flip it is 1/2, you're actually like sort of setting up a straw man for the physical probability interpretation there, right? Because what you actually have is a system of the coin and the coin flipper and the environment, right? And you say, given that entire system, the probability that I observe heads is 1/2, right? And you can say that's a physical probability of the system, right? But if you then change your system, like I take the coin and I'm just better at cheating and I manage to flip it 100% of the time to be heads, well, the probability has changed. But that corresponds to a change in the physical system, right? Like, it doesn't seem like it's actually a weakness that I can change my system to change the probabilities. Like in fact, that seems like a necessary feature of any physical interpretation of probability.
I do not disagree with that. There are a couple of important points to be made, though. One is that, in fact, the predominant school of physical probability, frequentism, does not allow you to assign probabilities to individual systems at all. One of the restrictions is you're only allowed to assign probabilities to elements of infinite ensembles. And you have to specify which ensemble. So if I say, what's the probability that this specific coin will come up heads? The frequentist says, that's not an answerable question. You might as well ask me how much love weighs. There's another school of physical probability that I'll get to in just a minute that I don't understand very well called propensity, which appears to hold that single systems can have probabilities. I'm going to note that, but I'm not going to comment on it because I know very little about it. Luca, are you? Sorry?
Propensity is the first definition which you keep there.
Frequentistic probability does not assert that there exists a propensity for an individual physical system.
It's inherent to the object.
Right. So in frequentism, it's actually inherent to the ensemble.
No, I think
to the collective.
This is propensity. He's claiming that your first point is equivalent to propensity.
So if I understand propensity correctly, then the propensity interpretation of probability holds that you can take a specific coin and you can say, there is a probability that's a property of this coin. Right? So frequentism would say no. In other words, when I say inherent to the object, this is a broad statement. I'm only distinguishing the object from the subject. Right? So for frequentists, the object that the probability is a property of is an infinite ensemble of coins, never a single coin. Whereas in propensity, it is a property of a single coin. That's what I understand. So I believe that Luca is an expert on, or knows more than I about propensity, so I would suggest asking, am I right?
No.
No, oh, yeah. Okay, God help you if you want to know more about propensity. Let me actually, briefly.
So, can we give a similar definition for truth, like physical truth and evidential truth? Or also the question you say, why probability works, why logic works?
That's a good question. I haven't thought about it intensely for the last couple of days, so I'm not going to try to answer it. But I think truth is a great thing to think about. I just haven't been thinking about it lately. I've been thinking about how to lie to you guys, actually. Let me move on here, because questions about physical probability are great, but I have more to say about physical probability, and I also want to contrast it with the alternative school, which those of you in the back who can't read the bottom of my slide have no idea what it is at this point. So let me update your probability distribution over the bottom of my slide. Evidential probability holds that probability is not a property of physical systems out there. Probability is associated with subjects, with agents, with observers. I assign probabilities. They're a way that I describe physical systems, and they are subjective, that they're inherent to me or to you. So probability is a measure of, broadly speaking, how much somebody believes a statement. Different agents, so the subject here is an observer or an agent, somebody who needs to have probabilities, right? Rocks don't need probabilities. They just fly around in outer space and bounce off of each other. They just do their thing. They don't care about probabilities. Probabilities are a human concept, and maybe they're something that other agents, you know, dogs might come up with as well, or robots. Yes?
Is frequentists supposed to fit into this, or is it a separate?
No, frequentists are physical probabilists.
Oh, I see.
Bayesians are evidential probabilists. The word here is subjective. This is a fundamentally subjective concept of probability. And that means two things. One is, it means that it's inherent to the subject, word usage. The other is, different agents can assign different probabilities. This is not such a shocking thing in science, because, for instance, what was your name again?
Adam.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I wasn't sure. I'm looking at Adam. I see his face. Chris Brooks is looking at Adam. He sees the back of his head. We have different perspectives, right? There's nothing controversial about that. At any given time, we're seeing different sides of this particular object. So that means that we're going to interact with those objects in different ways. You know, I might say hi, and Chris might say, because, of course, he knows that no one would see him do that. We act in different ways. Different observers may assign different probabilities, representing the fact that they'll act in different ways towards the system. Now, I don't want to make that a strong analogy. It's not a strong analogy. Perspective and probability are different, because we can break down this whole perspective notion. This goes all the way back to Leibniz. And just say, well, there is an underlying reality of what Adam looks like, his sort of three-dimensional model, and it's just that Chris and I happen to be seeing different perspectives on it. But if we closed our eyes and thought about Adam, we could, you know, we both visualize the same 3D picture, right? So that's why it's not a strong analogy. But what I'm trying to do is give a plausibility argument why this is not sheer insanity. Yeah.
Well, now that I know you're trying to put frequentism in this first category, I mean, wouldn't it be fairer just, I mean, saying it's a real existing quantity is a bit weird. Like saying the truth is a real existing quantity.
I agree.
No, but wouldn't you want to say, if you were a good relative frequentist, that probabilities are objective quantities or objective properties, like truth?
Yep.
Not that they're real, not that they exist in the world, but that they're actual. No.
We might. Can you explain to me what you would mean by objective and true, but not real. In the same sense as mass.
Something like, what is it? Things that are tautologically true. All men are humans. All right, that doesn't exist in the world. It's just a statement that has a truth value. So it's objectively true, but it's not a property. It's not a physical thing.
So 2 = 2 is true, but not physical.
Yes.
Okay. The trouble then is that we are back to logic, right? If we talk about the world of mathematics, the world of logical propositions, then that is hermetically sealed. One of the critical aspects underlying probability, what I was kind of trying to get at in the very introduction to this, is that probability is intended to form a bridge between what's out there and mathematics. So, sure, there are statements that are true without being real. But everybody agrees that probability has something to do with the real world. Roughly speaking, the evidentialist Bayesians say that probability is a technique that we use to deal with the real world. It's the logic of the real world, if you will. And Brinkman to say that it is an element of the real world. It's something that is out there, in the sense that there are objective statements that can, in principle, be made about probability, right? So a probability is not itself a statement. A probability is a real number. So 2 = 2 is a statement. But a probability is, for instance, 1/2. And I could say, the probability of this is 1/2, and now I've made a logical statement, right?
So, I mean, I would just find this hard to believe, especially if you're saying frequentists are usually tied to the view that there's infinite ensembles to which probability concepts apply. And infinite ensembles obviously don't exist. So why would you be even, it seems that's on the face of it an inconsistent way. I mean, you know, maybe down the road it becomes inconsistent when you consider all these different considerations. But to define the view by an inconsistency is a bit...
I agree.
...is a bit harsh.
All right,
so I see it's not getting a fair shake in this lecture then.
So I will present the what's known as well as I can. But I have no intention of hiding my own beliefs. But along the way, I mean, I am very much a synthesizer. I think both of these are patently absurd. They're ridiculous, right? The problem is they're all we've got. Everything falls into one of these categories. This is a hard problem. Every single interpretation of quantum mechanics is absurd. Every single interpretation of probability is absurd in one way or another. Like religions, if you adhere to them, they make a lot of sense because you love them. And if you don't adhere to them, then they seem patently absurd because you have some other religion. To me, they're both absurd, but they both work well. And so someday, maybe we will have the nice smooth manifold where these are just charts pasted onto it. Yeah, Sonia.
I'm just wondering if you could sort of cast physical probability in sort of a platonic idea, and sort of that there exists some sort of level where those perfect
forms,
perfect quantities do exist, and we just see some sort of a reflection.
Probably. Now there are 17 interpretations. Well done.
You know, but I'm just saying that could fit into the physical probability group.
Yes, I think that's
where there's still an absolute truth. Because in sort of the evidential, you have an idea of that nothing is right or wrong, whereas the idea of having a platonic reality set onto the physical world would still give you a sense of right and wrong.
Sure. Interesting. I'm just not going to address it. Because I want to move on and give a little bit more concrete detail about what these absurd things mean in practice. The earliest known reference to probability comes from Aristotle. So this was our first stab at defining what probability was. Question?
So for, I think we said it is probability defined by how much we know about something or how much we don't know about something.
Some people would say each. And there are other people who would say neither one. That's not a simple question. To really parse what you just said would require a couple semesters of philosophy. So I really can't answer it, honestly. I certainly have not. I've only started sketching out a couple of the answers to what probability is, and all of them are wrong. Okay, so my apologies for that totally unsatisfactory answer. It's the best I can do. Okay, the most common example of physical probability is frequentist probability. And the probability of some event X or some statement X about something that will happen in an experiment is defined as the limiting frequency, the limiting value or ratio of the number of times you observe X divided by the total number of observations you have made where X could have occurred. You know, modulo a page or so of technical caveats to rule out really persnickety mathematical, you know, misinterpretations, right? In other words, what I'm saying is, please don't make me caveat all of this. That's the definition of a probability. That's what it is. So a frequentist statement about a coin would be, the probability of a coin coming up heads is a half. And the reason I can say that is that I flipped that coin, or coins just like that coin, many, many times. And it appeared that the relative frequency was converging to one half. There were 55 out of the first 100 flips, and 512 out of the first 1,000 flips, and 5,067 out of the first 10,000 flips, right? And I say, it looks to me like as I flip it more and more, it's converging to one half. And so I say, this, my estimate of the probability is one half, and that's pretty close to the true value. And the true value is defined as the limit of longer and longer experiments on that collective of coins. And a collective is essentially an ensemble. So the core rule here is you can only really use the word probability when you have an infinite ensemble of samples. And the reason is that probability is defined. This is the absolute rock bottom definition as the limiting value as n goes to infinity. So if you don't have an infinite ensemble that at least theoretically exists, then there is no limit, right? There's a you know, maximum size. If n is never bigger than a trillion, then you get to that point, and that's as far as you go. So this is why I say that in frequentist probability, you've defined the problem technically out of existence. You have to tweak and futz the underlying definition in order to ever apply it. Yes?
I'm just wondering, might be absurd, but if I want to avoid this problem of, because I have to think of infinite ensembles that don't seem to exist, can I be some sort of like finite frequentist? Is that a workable sort of interpretation? Or?
Sure. So let me answer that with some quotes. And then I'll come back to you in a minute and ask if I've answered your question. Okay, so the book here, this is a good book. It's a good book that I disagree with, Probability, Statistics, and Truth. You can get one of these Dover things. You can get it for 10 bucks. Richard von Mises. Von Mises, Fisher are probably the two biggest names associated with classical frequentist probability. So a couple of quotes to sort of, partly to define what we're talking about and partly to back up the fact that I'm not just beating on the theory when I tell you these things. Von Mises says the probability of getting, that was supposed to be a six, sorry. It was not a subtle pun, it was just a typo. The probability of a six when a die is thrown is a physical property of a given die. It's analogous to mass, specific heat, electrical resistance. The theory of probability is only concerned with relations existing between physical quantities of this kind. So this is the basic statement of physical probability, right? I mean, von Mises makes it very clear. Probability is an experimental science like physics. It's not a tool that's used for doing various sciences. It is a science itself. It is not a branch of mathematics. It is a science. Presumably, look, every single author who's ever written an influential book about probability says something different from every other author. But this is one of the canonical books. Second quote. We state here explicitly the rational concept of probability, which is the only basis of probability calculus, applies only to problems in which either the same event repeats itself again and again, or a great number of uniform elements are involved at the same time. Using the language of physics, we may say that in order to apply the theory of probability, we must have a practically unlimited sequence of uniform observations. Yes?
In the case of a die, the most I will understand about that die is that it's a cube, and it's really a cube, and it has a by throwing it a number of times and getting a probability of 6 coming out. But there is an experiment I can do to that same die, which does not involve an infinite amount of trials, that will tell me that the die is a cube. So how is this compatible with this? What other information will I get from the, what other physical property is inscribed within the probability of getting a 6, other than the fact that the die is a cube?
Let me draw a die. I have very limited drawing skills, but I think I'm up to this one. I will draw the die that you have just described. I apologize for the fact that this will be in two dimensions. Okay. So, I've begun to draw a cube, but of course I haven't told you what's in the cube. So this cube is made of plexiglass, thin plexiglass, can take its thickness to be very small, and the bottom one-third of the cube is filled with lead.
That was not my point. Was the cube is uniform. There are two experiments which I can do. Excuse me. So that it's a cube and that it has a uniform mass, uniform density.
Right.
So and I can make a finite number of experiments. I can perform a finite number of experiments that will give me this symmetry of the die.
Before I say my next thing, are you convinced that you have sufficiently described the system? That you haven't missed anything that will allow me to describe something consistent with what you just said that would nonetheless obviously have different probabilities? While you're thinking about that, I apologize for what I've just done, which is I'm being a Socratic pain in the ass. I'm sorry. I can come up with one more thing that I think will be consistent with what you described, but you'll say, oh, well, that's not what I was talking about, right? I don't know if I can come up with any more. But in theory, you can keep constraining more and more physical properties of the system, right? So what I was going to say is, fine, you've got a uniform mass density. Oh, and we're doing this in an electric field as well as a gravitational field, because I mean you implied that there was a gravitational field, right? Otherwise the die wouldn't roll at all. So there's an electric field around, by the way, forgot to mention that, and the die has some charge on it. I'm being a pain in the ass, so don't bother to respond yet. The point is, what you're saying is that if we know enough about the other physical properties of the die, then we can conclude just from the physical theories that we have and the logic that we know that there is a symmetry between the faces and the die must be equiprobable with respect to that symmetry. And therefore we can dispense with the whole concept of probability.
The question is, as a separate additional physical.
We can derive probability from these existing physical quantities. And the answer to that is that I don't know what von Mises or one of the gods of frequentism would have said in response to that. I think they would have said that the fact that the probability is correlated with those physical quantities, perhaps in some cases even strongly, does not mean that the probability is not an independent physical quantity of its own that might, under some circumstances, not be entirely specified by the other physical properties. Or perhaps it is always specified by a potentially unlimited set of physical quantities, and it's a hell of a lot simpler to just write down the probability. The last thing, though, that I want to say is that in making your symmetry argument, you've actually jumped to what is a Bayesian perspective. This is Laplace's principle of indifference. And so von Mises would have said you have to measure the probability. You can't necessarily conclude it just from your beliefs about something else.
Yes, but my knowledge of the probability will not give you more information than I will get by this Bayesian interpretation. So that it will not give me access to another realm of physical quantities in my view.
Sure. I think to go, this would be a fascinating discussion. I just don't want to have it right now. I want to say a little bit more before I have a short break so people can grab a coffee and then come back and finish up. So the point of this quote, to return to this, is that the frequentist interpretation really is about practically unlimited sequences or sets. Okay, finally. I'll let you decide whether this is the time for it.
If the last slide was the time for it.
All right. Fire away.
So you're, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're objecting to this idea of probability as a fundamental physical quantity, which sort of oddly requires an infinite ensemble of things to actually measure exactly, right? But you could make an analogous argument to mass, right? We say mass is an inherent physical quantity, but to actually exactly measure mass, we need a device with, like, you know, infinite accuracy, right? Which we clearly don't have. I mean, but our inability to measure mass exactly, within arbitrary sure. certainty, doesn't mean that we just throw away the concept of mass, right? Like, it doesn't.
Yep. So the issue is not that you require an infinite ensemble of measurements to measure the probability. Mm-hmm. It's that it's defined in terms of an infinite ensemble. Mass, if you think about it, is not defined in terms of an infinite ensemble. It's defined in terms of a sort of a Platonic ideal of curved spacetime, which we can't be sure whether we have or not, but what we see is consistent with that. But in cases where I explicitly do not have an infinite ensemble, then the very definition of probability breaks down. This is not to say that it's not salvageable. It's merely that we need a more robust definition, one that is always applicable. Let me go on a little bit. I mean, good questions. And by the way, for those of you who asked a question here, if you didn't get a satisfactory answer, please email it to me in more detail. But I want to go on now. I want to throw in one final concept of frequentist probability. Sorry for the long quote. This is another von Mises, but I have no way of really making this shorter. The collective is the core notion of frequentist probability, at least for von Mises. A collective is a sequence of uniform events or processes which differ by certain observable attributes. In other words, each sample, each element, can be different from the others. And they differ in, say, colors, numbers, or whatever. For example, all the peas grown by a botanist concerned with the problem of heredity may be considered as a collective. And the attributes we're interested in are the different colors of the flowers. Anybody know what this is a reference to? Mendel, yep. The principle which underlies the whole of our treatment of the probability problem is that a collective must exist before we begin to speak of probability. The definition of probability which we shall give is only concerned with the probability of encountering a certain attribute in a given collective. So what von Mises is saying is we're allowed to apply probability to a sufficiently large set as long as it is practically infinite. Unfortunately, in different places, he demands infinity, and he speaks of limiting frequencies, taking a limit. And in other places, he says, big enough. I do not know of any truly satisfactory resolution that lets me identify exactly what a probability is. Exactly. And this is nerve-wracking because in frequentist probability, the probability is defined as a physical quantity, one that in principle exists exactly. And so being unable to define it except to, well, you know, give or take a bit, it robs it of validity. So we have a shaky mathematical foundation at best. This is my opinion, but these at least, I mean, if you think I am being unfair, by all means, read the first chapter of the book. I'm not, that's not a gotcha. That's not a, and you will see that I'm right. It's, read it and then come back and tell me why I'm wrong, right? I can't be completely fair. I'm just not going to lie to you and say that I am being fair, because I would have to just do the sort of covering my eyes thing. Okay, final comment on physical probability. I mentioned this before. Propensity holds that probability is a basic physical property of an individual system which causes it to tend to behave in a certain way. I could say a bit more, but because I don't truly understand it, I'll leave it for somebody else to go out and research it and tell me about it. So with that, we've succeeded in having a very interactive conversation. I'm going to declare a quick, let's say, 4-minute coffee break for anybody who wants to sprint up and very quickly grab a cup of coffee. Okay?
So,